Hey, listeners, a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast is now the Not Crazy Podcast. Same feed, different name. Hosted by Gabe Howard and Jackie Zimmerman. Search for Not Crazy or visit us at psychcentral.com/notcrazy. In the meantime, enjoy this legacy episode of BSP, and we hope you'll check out the new Not Crazy Podcast.
For reasons that utterly escape everyone involved, you're listening to a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast. Here are your hosts, Gabe Howard and Michelle Hammer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of A Bipolar, a Schizophrenic, and a Podcast. My name is Gabe. I have bipolar.
Hi, I'm Michelle, and I have schizophrenia. How you doing today, Gabe?
I am all right. I think that it would be neat if, like, just to, like, test our listeners, if one time I was like, hi, my name is Gabe, and I have schizophrenia. And you were like, my name is Michelle, I have bipolar.
Oh, no, we'd confuse the world. I think the entire world would flip around.
I think that, like, all the first-time listeners would be like, huh, that's weird. It said a young woman's journey through schizophrenia. I thought Gabe was a dude.
Well, I do get emails on my website sometimes, and they say, Dear Gabe.
That's true. I get emails on my website sometimes that say, Dear Gabe.
I hate you.
Michelle, so let's talk about maybe a more difficult subject, and certainly more difficult than we usually cover here on a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast, but something that I feel just has a lot of value. As you know, about a week ago, there was an attack on a synagogue. I believe, yeah. As of right now, 11 people are dead, 5 are injured, including law enforcement. And obviously, this is going to affect everybody. It should affect everybody. It's a violent act. It's a scary act. People were worshiping and they're dead. But I am not Jewish. You are. Does this?
Yes, I am.
Does this affect you differently, knowing that it was an attack on your culture and on your, I don't want to say way of life. I guess I don't know how to say it, but the gunman said, I hate Jews, and opened fire. How do you feel?
I mean, it's upsetting, but it's also confusing because why do you hate Jews so much that you got to kill them? I mean, what did the Jews do to you? I want to know.
But
what makes you hate the Jews? It is upsetting. And when I found that it was in Pittsburgh, I was like, oh my goodness, my friend Lily, she's in Pittsburgh. She's a Jew. Oh my God. Oh no. I texted her. I texted her on Instagram. I'm texting her. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? She gets back to me. Yes, I'm okay. I went to the vigil. The community is very small, you know, and I was like, oh my God, thank goodness you're okay. I got very scared because she's pretty much the only person I know from Pittsburgh, and she's Jewish, so I immediately was freaking out that she could possibly have been there or knew people. I think she did know some of the people, but thank God she's okay. But it's just really upsetting because this did happen in Pittsburgh, but things like this can happen anywhere.
Well, things like this have happened anywhere.
Usually on Saturdays, you can just go to temple, but for high holidays, you have to be a member and have tickets to even enter, and there's always security for things like this, but on Saturdays it's usually more open and anyone can go on a Saturday. You usually at most temples, but some are different. But, you know, there usually is much more higher sense of security, which some other people don't always understand, whether they say, why do you have to be a member of a temple? Like at a church, you don't have to be a member. And I'm like, no, you're at a member of a temple to get tickets because it's safety issued. Because at a temple, I mean, I know at churches they hand around that basket where you give money, everybody gives money, and that's how the church can make money. Like, we don't do that. You have to be a member so that, you know, people just can't enter, you know, and with violence or anything. You know what I'm trying to say?
Listen, Michelle, longtime listeners of the show know that we are not exactly worshiping church-going people. So I'm assuming that you don't go to temple every Saturday. That's like not your thing. Yeah. That's okay. No judgment. But if you wanted to, would this impact your desire to go? I mean, now that you've seen this on the news, does this make you not want to do something?
No, I don't think you should be scared to do something because somebody's trying to scare you. I think you should live your life and you shouldn't be scared to walk around living your life in fear all the time because, you know, then you'd just be scared of everything. I live in New York City. If you watch the 11 o'clock news, somebody is always, you know, being hurt. Somebody's always being killed, or there's a drug thing, or there's a rape. There's always something on the 11 o'clock news. And if I was scared of that, then I wouldn't be living in New York City.
I happen to agree with you, but listen, this is an easier said than done thing. Remember, at one point, we, Gabe and Michelle, were so sick we couldn't leave our houses. I thought that window washers were staring at me through,
I don't do that,
windows. I had to protect my property while walking around in my pajamas that terrified the woman I was living with at the time. And this is not in response to any reality. Like, I was terrified because of major depression, because of paranoia, because of, you know, hallucinations, et cetera. I mean, not to list every single thing that scared me medically, but this is real. I mean, think of how paranoid you were that your mom was trying to hurt you. And that was completely made up. Like, you just invented that in your head. This is real. How do you rationalize that in your mind, that you're not worried about things that actually happened, but you were really worried about things that you just made up?
I mean, that's a good question. All that stuff that I made up in my head was paranoid thoughts that just went around and around and around and around. These real things that happen, they happen, but then I know what reality is, and I'm not going to be afraid of just life in front of me. But paranoia makes you afraid of your whole entire life, your whole entire body. You're afraid to speak, you're afraid to talk, you're afraid to get out of bed. But I guess reality, I mean, you can't be afraid of what's real in the world. If it's bad, you can't live your life being afraid. And I think getting over paranoia, how I used to be, was just stop being so scared all the time. You can't live your life in fear. The same thing with paranoia, understanding that when I understood that I was paranoid, I understood that I had to get rid of my paranoia. And overcoming paranoia, you just learn to not be scared anymore. I mean, of course I'm scared. I'm not going to walk around at 3 a.m. just on like a street completely alone. I know that would be a silly thing to do. That puts myself in danger, but I don't walk around scared.
I'm not going to lie. If I ran into you in a dark alley at 3 a.m., I'd be terrified. You are the reason that I don't go out at 3 a.m., Michelle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're frightening.
Yeah.
Seriously. And I hate being serious because I want to make more jokes because that's humor is my coping mechanism. And this is why we're great co-hosts together, because humor is your coping mechanism too.
Yeah.
It's like, why address the problem head on when you can just scream profanity at it?
I know.
But this is difficult. I remember after I got well, when I considered myself in recovery, and the very first time that I heard about somebody in our community dying by suicide, you know, it wasn't somebody that I knew personally. It was one of those friend of a friend of a friend things, you know, somebody that went to an agency that I was a member of, you know, she went to a different support group, but all I could think of is, whoa, people are dying by this. And a lot of my friends and family who don't suffer from mental illness, who don't have they were just like, well, why are you worried about how somebody else died? And I was like, because they died by suicide. That could happen to me. And they didn't understand that it wasn't that she was dead. It was how she passed away that scared me so much, because if she succumbed, I could succumb. And when I heard about this thing on the news, all I could think of was, oh my God, how does Michelle feel? I thought of you immediately. I almost cared less about how I felt living in a world where this could happen. And I was more concerned about how you felt living in a world where this could happen. And maybe that's empathy. Maybe that's nonsense. Maybe that's deflection. Maybe I just decided that I wanted you to tell me it was okay. And maybe that's an unfair burden on you. But the bottom line is, I think people all over the world, and especially people listening to our show, are having like massive feelings about this. We are already suffering often from mental instability. We go back and forth on this spectrum and things scare us. Michelle, tell everybody it'll be okay.
I mean, it will be okay. And I want to, you know, hear more about what this shooter, what his ideas were. Why did he do this? What was his reasoning? I want to hear his rationale and what he actually has to say.
Really? Really? You think there's like a cause? You think he's going to sit down and explain it to you? And you'll be like, that's reasonable. You know, why didn't
well,
you just
no,
say
it's not going to be reasonable, but I want to hear what his opinion is. And I like that he was not killed. I like that he was captured, because now he's going to go through pretty much hell with interrogations and jail, you know?
I know that there is no good explanation. Obviously, there's no good explanation.
Because all Jews are lawyers, of course.
Oh.
And the Jew lawyers are just going to, you know, bring him up. He's going to jail. Every Jew lawyer is going to, he's just going to go.
Right on target with the Jew joke. That's perfect. That's
the
just
Jew
perfect.
Jew lawyer, yes.
You know what's fascinating? If I would have said that exact same thing, people would have been like, oh my God, that's how could he say it? But because you said it, people are like, that's probably true.
What about that guy at the conference that told you to get rid of the Jew? I wonder how he feels.
Oh, Michelle, I forgot about that until you just brought it up. But there's so much hatred in the world. And there's one of the hallmarks of living with our illness. And I know that bipolar and schizophrenia are very different. And there's a lot of people that listen to our show that have like major depression or anxiety. But the delusions, the paranoia, the anxiety, all of these things live in us, and they were largely based on nothing. But more and more, when I turn on the news and I see these things, it terrifies me. It just terrifies me because it's really happening. And there's this part of me, maybe it's grandiosity because I also have bipolar disorder, but there's this part of me that thinks it's like my job to fix it. And so now what do? I have this desire to do something because I'm tired of doing nothing. I have this desire to fix it because I think that it's really, really broken. And this ruminates around in my mind. What is a coping skill? And maybe you don't know. So if you don't know, don't make one up. For the love of God, don't make one up. But what's a coping skill to get out of this, oh my God, the world's going to end if I don't fix it and everything is horrible? My favorite coping skill is to stop watching the news, which is terrible.
I try not to watch the news. Like I said, the 11 o'clock news, if you watch the 11 o'clock news in New York City, you will want to move out of New York City, honestly.
We're going to hear from our sponsor. Give us a minute and we'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. Secure, convenient, and affordable online counseling. All counselors are licensed, accredited professionals. Anything you share is confidential. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist whenever you feel it's needed. A month of online therapy often costs less than a single traditional face-to-face session. Go to BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral and experience 7 days of free therapy to see if online counseling is right for you. BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral.
Gabe. How's your life doing? I think you had a rough time like a week ago.
As you know, it's a little over a week ago now. Listeners of the show know that my father-in-law passed away, my wife's father, obviously, and his memorial service just passed.
How old was he?
He was 64.
Oh my God.
He was young and it was sudden. And Let me tell you some stuff. Let me tell you a little narrative structure. Pull up a towel, Michelle. You don't get a blanket because you're schizophrenic.
Mr. Rogers'
so you
story,
get a towel.
Please. Get your sweater on.
One of the very first things that I ever saw my father-in-law do, you know, outside of like just be at my house or her house, is he gave the eulogy for his in-laws, his mother and father-in-law. They passed away pretty close together, so they just had one memorial service for both of them, and he did the eulogy. Now, I'd only been with Kendall for a little bit, under a year. We weren't married yet, and he walks up, you know, onto the little pulpit podium thingy, and he said that his mother-in-law and his father-in-law didn't like him very much, that they didn't get along very well. And I remember sitting in the audience thinking, why the fuck would you start with that? Like really? Like, and there wasn't anybody else that could give this eulogy. Like, the dude eulogizing these people is like, hey, we didn't get along. We didn't like each other. And I thought, why would you do this? This is like the worst opening of all time. And I stood there giving my eulogy, and I said that story. And I also said, which was really the start of the eulogy, is that my father-in-law and I didn't really get along very well. We didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things.
Was he shorter than you?
Oh, he was a foot shorter than me. I mean, he was.
So you really didn't see eye.
Yeah, we literally didn't see eye to eye. Yeah, yeah. He was too old to jump up in the air, and I was too old to bend over. But I mean, listen, we were natural rivals for a number of reasons. Sincerely, you know, I was the first person to marry into his family. My wife is his oldest child, his only girl. You know, so there's step one. I'm a huge Ohio State fan. He's a huge Michigan fan. And for those that follow college football, they know about the Ohio-Michigan rivalry. So, you know, that was like strike two. We don't see eye to eye on probably half of politics, definitely not on religion. And you know, he is stubborn and loud and opinionated. And as everybody knows, I'm just so flexible and laid back.
Yeah, totally. You really, really are.
He was a big personality, and I was a big personality, and we clashed. And I understand why we clashed. There is nothing in my mind that doesn't see that happening 100 more times in my lifetime. Certain personality types, when they get in the same room together, they're gonna buck. They're gonna poof. They're gonna, you know, I think of some of the arguments that we've had, Michelle. I mean, just, you know,
I would never try to fight you, Gabe. You would just sit on me and I'd die.
Really? I don't think that would happen. I think you'd wriggle your way out and like throat punch me and that would just be the end of it. You'd hit me with a lacrosse stick in the back of the head.
Possibly.
It's not the disagreement. It's not the intense discussions. That's none of the stuff that bothers me about our relationship. It's that it never evolved. I mean, I married his daughter. I love his daughter. And he was a good dad to all three of his children. He's married to the same woman for 40 years. He paid all his own bills. His kids are doing good in the world. And he and his wife get full credit for that. And he did lots of cool stuff. I mean, he promoted bands in the 70s and 80s. At his funeral, there was pictures of him with like Journey and Eddie Money and you know, other notables. And he never bragged about it. Like it never came up. It never occurred to him to mention it because he was actually, despite all of his bravado, a pretty humble guy. But we just never got past it.
How did Kendall take the whole?
Kendall's devastated.
Yeah.
I mean,
my dad is 64 as well. So, I mean, I don't even know what I would do. I would collapse. I wouldn't be able to speak.
There's a lot that I can say. There's a lot that I can say about the day. There's a lot that I can say about Kendall's father. And there's a lot that I can say about Kendall. But, you know, Michelle, you're like my friend. You're just my friend. And if I got in a fight with your dad and you said to me, Gabe, that's my dad. I need you to make up with him. I'd do it. Because that's like a decent thing to do because I value you, Michelle. Kendall is in another stratosphere compared to you. No offense. And she asked me to do it and I didn't. And I just didn't. And that has nothing to do with her father and that has nothing to do with Kendall. And it has everything to do with me. And I don't know why I was so stubborn. I was at his funeral and they do that thing with the projector where all the pictures go by. I don't think there is a single picture in existence that has both of us in it. Kendall loves her dad and Kendall loves me. And in 7 years, not a single picture.
I see what you're saying. You didn't get along.
There's no reason. There's no reason.
It was just a personality clash?
It was a personality clash. Yeah, the dude wasn't evil. I'd love to tell you that I'm justified because, like, you know, he was like a Klan member or he was like, you know, the BTK killer and only I figured it out. No, he was a 60-year-old boring guy. He liked sports and watching cars go around in circles. He was stubborn. He was opinionated. In other words, he was exactly like me. I said during the eulogy that the wonderful thing about stubborn fathers is they raise daughters who can live with stubborn men. And this worked to my advantage.
Gotcha.
But
I see what you're saying here.
The final thing that I want to say on it, and then we can certainly move on. And this, in my opinion, is the thing that I missed and that I want listeners to understand. And if they hear nothing else, I hope that they hear this. The nicest thing this guy ever did for me was what he didn't do. His daughter shows up and says, this is the guy I'm dating. He's 9 years older than I am. He's twice divorced. He lives with bipolar disorder. He's literally mentally ill. For a living, he writes and talks openly about, you know, abusing drugs and alcohol, about putting post-it notes on strippers' heads when he left, and of hypersexuality and of buying prostitutes and all of the things that we've talked about on this show. And he is unrepentant about it while also just being incredibly sad about it. And this is his job. This is what he does. This is who he is. And by the way, he just started doing it, so he's broke. He has like no money and he barely has anything. He's mentally ill. He has no money. He's twice divorced and he's friends with his ex-wife. He didn't give a shit.
He was liked like, you.
He did.
Okay.
Yep.
There you go.
And the reason that I bring this up is not to tell like this long and involved story about how, you know, Gabe had to bury his father-in-law, because we're all going to have to bury people that we love eventually. I mean, there's not a lot of data to mine from all of this, except for this. I guarantee that there are listeners here that are pissed off at people, who are mad at people, who have long running wars with people over a variety of reasons. And I want to tell them, if one of those reasons is not they judge you for being mentally ill, if they accept you for who you are and don't hold your mental illness against you, find common ground. Because there's just a lot of people that won't do that for you. There just are. You and I both know it. Think of all the people that have fucked over Gabe and Michelle because they heard that we had bipolar and schizophrenia. They heard that we were mentally ill and they didn't even want to talk to us anymore. They judged us based on a diagnosis and we were dead to them. So if you're in a long-term fight with somebody that doesn't give a shit about your mental illness, the thing that you're fighting about has nothing to do with that. For real. Those people are gems. Make up. Just make up with them.
Sidebar on that.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel judged when people come up to you and they kind of put their hand on your shoulder and they go, "So, how are you doing?" Do you? I feel judged when people say that to me.
Remember what you taught me about privilege? When I said that, you know, before I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, if I didn't get a job, it's just because I didn't get a job. Yeah. And if somebody was mean to me, it's just because they were mean to me. And then after I was diagnosed, I wondered, did I not get the job because I was bipolar? Are they being mean to me because I'm bipolar? And you said, welcome to life as a woman, because that's right. How women always feel. And of course, that's how minorities feel. And so sometimes, yeah, people are like, how you doing? And I'm like, because I'm bipolar, I'm fine. But at the same time, you and I talk a lot about context. I try to think, you know, even if they're wrong, even if they are being kind of condescending, as long as they are being condescending because they genuinely care how I'm doing, I kind of want to give it to them. You know, I kind of just want to hug them and tell them I'm doing okay, because maybe they're worried, and maybe them being worried is like being afraid of New York. It's unwarranted and you need to live your life. But like you said, New York gives back. It gives you a subway and it gives you beautiful things. And you have that giant Christmas tree that I just realized that you as a Jewish woman don't give a shit about, but that I really like.
I have a lovely menorah.
Yes, I'm sure. Don't burn down your apartment.
Again. That wasn't my fault. That was my fault. It was the illegal splice box. I didn't do anything wrong. Don't report me to the
cops. Falling asleep with a cigarette in your mouth. I remember.
That's not what happened. It was in the wall.
You put a cigarette in the wall?
No, the box in the wall was wired incorrectly.
Michelle.
And that caused the fire.
Michelle.
Yeah?
Are you okay?
Don't say I started the fire.
You didn't start
the fire.
The fireman
told me I was lucky. The fireman said I was lucky to be alive.
It
and my landlord told me you could die walking down the street.
You didn't start the fire.
Okay, shut up. Just shut up. Shut up, Gabe.
That was a hell of a weekend, wasn't it?
At my grandfather's funeral, like, he was a person that nobody really liked, and we just, you know, had a very graveside funeral, and people are trying to say, like, nice things and everything, you know, and we kind of said, well, we hope the Mets do well for you this season, and the rabbi goes, yes, the Mets do need a divine entity to help them this season, yes.
You Grief is a weird thing, and reflection is a weird thing, and seeing people differently is a weird thing. And it is a shame that it takes tragedy, like the tragedy that happened at the synagogue, and people dying, and like my father-in-law passing away, and then me finally deciding to, you know, scratch beneath the surface and see if there could have been any common ground. And listen, maybe there wouldn't have been. Maybe we would have tried to work it out and we would have ended up fighting anyway. I don't know. The world is not a lock. I'm not angry at my father-in-law in any way. I'm angry because I didn't try. And what's that say about me? Especially when I was walking around saying, he's an asshole and that's why I don't want to deal with him. And I was so big of an asshole, I didn't even try to get along with my wife's father. It was nothing to do with him. It wasn't even anything to do with me. I should have done it for her.
Somebody dies, you think back to like the meanest thing you've ever said to that person and then you feel so horrible about it.
Yeah. And you're like, was that necessary? Mm-hmm. Was that helpful? Mm-hmm. Was that productive? And the answer is almost always no.
Yeah, try to remember the good things you had with that person and don't, like, think all the negative things maybe said to that person and then it just makes you feel bad. You know, try to remember, we had a good time at that time.
My mother-in-law is an ultra-cool person, and she's like, look, Jim liked you, and he was an asshole. But he was our asshole, and he was opinionated, and he was stubborn, but he knew what good was. And he always felt that I was a good husband. And for a guy that hates everything and a guy that's always angry, when he likes you, I mean, there's no bigger compliment as much as I hate to see. He's like the Simon Cowell of father-in-laws.
I thought it was dreadful. It was dreadful. That's my Simon Cowell impression in not a British accent.
Are you going to give me the golden buzzer for my eulogy performance?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the golden buzzer. You're going straight to the live show.
I'm going straight to the live shows?
You're going straight to the live shows.
Yes!
I'm going to vote for you, Gabe. That was such a good eulogy. Yeah. You're going to be the eulogiologist.
Michelle, we've covered a lot of stuff as it comes to dealing with our own mental health in the wake of the things that happen in the world. Unfortunately, you know, mass shootings and violence are a part of our society, and scary things on the news are a part of our society, and death has always been a part of our society. When we were younger, apparently nobody was dying, and we've had to deal with challenging mental illness. I mean, bipolar and schizophrenia are not easy, but we also just have regular mental health, and we have to find a way to move forward in the world managing both mental illness and mental health. And that's incredibly difficult. And I don't know that we accomplished a single thing with this show except to say, if you're ignoring these triggers surrounding your own mental health and you're just getting more and more depressed and not paying attention to them and then blaming the things that are happening around you for all of your problems, you're probably not leading your best life. And I think that people should do the thing that I should have done with my father-in-law and was just, you know, be direct. Look, this is what we need to get along and let's do it. And the reason that I should have done it is for Kendall. But the reason that I think our listeners do it is because I think they will lead a better life.
Yeah, you're right. Like mental health, grief, it's all, you have to manage it together because like about 2 weeks ago, I was at my cousin's wedding and me and a bunch of my other cousins we just decided to sit in the back row and I'm next to my two younger cousins, you know, Peter and Anne, they're up there and the person, whatever, does the ceremony and they're like, we're bringing up, you know, we're going to talk about people who are not here. And they mentioned all my grandparents, his grandparents. And then they also mentioned my Uncle Doug, who was not there. And they, whenever anyone brings up my Uncle Doug, it makes me so upset. But what was worse than that is that my Uncle Doug's two kids, my cousins, were sitting right next to me. I look over at them, and their heads were straight forward, no emotion. But hearing my Uncle Doug's name, that he was brought up, it hurts so much every time that I just started to cry. But people cry at weddings, so I don't think anyone really realized why I was crying, but I was crying because my Uncle Doug got brought up. He died February 16th, 2011 from ALS. And at the time, my cousins were 17 and 20. And that's when I kind of realized or just made a promise to myself that I will never try to kill myself ever again. He was the first person that ever died that I was ever close to. All my grandparents were still alive, and my Uncle Doug died at age 52. And it felt like I had been stabbed in the stomach and somebody twisted the knife. And I realized if I kill myself, then other people are going to feel this pain that I'm feeling right now. And I don't want anyone else to feel the pain that I'm feeling right now.
Well, Michelle, hopefully there will be greener pastures around the corner. And obviously, acknowledging the scary things and the bad things and the sad things actually gives them less power. And I think that's one of the things that I want our listeners to know. Facing these things head on doesn't make it worse. It makes it better. And I think that I personally am guilty of avoiding things, and then they just take on a life of their own. And eventually you end up at a funeral with nothing but regrets.
Yeah.
Michelle, we like it when people buy our shirts.
Yes,
and
we
why do.
Do
we like it when people buy our shirts?
Because they make me happy.
Aw, the shirt was designed by Michelle based on a lengthy text message conversation totaling 2,175 text messages of mostly Michelle saying that I'm disgusting and that that shirt will be awful and that I should be ashamed of myself. I'm pretty sure I was talking to a bot at one point, but eventually we got it right with the Define Normal shirt that you can find at store.psychcentral.com. Show your support for the show. Show your support for Michelle. Show your support for Gabe. Go over to store.psychcentral.com and support A Bipolar Schizophrenic in a Podcast by leaving us a review, telling your friends, or I don't know. What else can they do, Michelle?
Appreciate the life you have. Life is short, so try to appreciate what you have now.
Aw. You know, that was like the most sincere I've ever heard you.
Well, now I'm all sad because I'm thinking about my Uncle Doug.
Aw, well, I love you.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We will see you next week on A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and A Podcast.
Bye.
You've been listening to A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and A Podcast. If you love this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Head over to iTunes or your preferred podcast app to subscribe, rate, and review. To work with Gabe, go to GabeHoward.com. To work with Michelle, go to schizophrenic.nyc. For free mental health resources and online support groups, head over to psychcentral.com. The show's official website is psychcentral.com/BSP. You can email us at show@psychcentral.com. Thank you for listening, and share widely.